This is 90.3.
This is Dear FM.
And a very warm welcome to Reminiscence on the Radio. My name is Karen Meenan and I'm delighted to be back with you in Near FM studio today. This is a brand new series bringing you back in time, and this week we'll be travelling back to 1968. We're going to spend the next hour or so sparking memories of days gone by with songs, stories and a splash of poetry. Each week I'll be chatting to some of my pals who'll share with us their special memories of life as it really was back in the 50s and 60s, and they'll tell us why this particular year was a special one for them. Our first song, Those Were the Days, was sung by Mary Hopkin and produced by no less than Paul McCartney, and was a number one hit around the world in 1968. It was originally a Russian folk tune. The lyrics were composed by Gene Raskin, who sang this as his closing number in the White Horse Tavern in New York. And the story goes that Paul McCartney heard it one night, thought the tune was very catchy, and he tried to get the Moody Blues to record it under his new record label, Apple Records. They declined, but he found success with Mary Hopkin, an 18-year-old Welsh folk singer, and that became the biggest hit of her career. The song was recorded in over 20 languages, and the composer, Gene Raskin, lived very handsomely off the royalties, buying a holiday home in Spain, a Porsche and a yacht. The tune is used to the equally catchy song Come On Ye Boys in Green. Yes, you were singing that, I know. I was too. Those were the days, all right. So from one Mary Hopkin to another, we're going to have another giant hit from Ireland back in the day, and it was Mary from Dunloe. It was recorded by Emmett Spiceland, and that was a hit in January of 1968.
Oh, then fare thee well, sweet Donegal. The Rosses and Gidore. I'm crossing the main ocean where the foaming billows roar. It breaks.
Mary from Dunloe by Emmett Spiceland, a number one hit in Ireland in January of 1968. In a little while, we're going to meet our first guest, Tony Murray, and he's going to share his own story from 1968. But just to jog our memory a little bit, here's a snapshot of what happened in Ireland and around the world that year. So 1968 has been described as a decade defining year, both at home and abroad. A bit like 2020, I imagine. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in April. Robert Kennedy was mortally wounded in June. And the anti-Vietnam peace movement continued to grow with frequent riots in America and in Europe. Closer to home, inspired by the protests in America, activists took to the streets of Derry, Belfast and Armagh in 1968. Their bid to effect peaceful change is arguably one of the great what-if moments in Irish history. So a big question, when did the troubles actually begin? Was it when the first stone was thrown or the first shot fired? Or was it earlier still with peaceful marches demanding civil rights? As with almost anything to do with Northern Ireland's turbulent political past, the moment is contested. And according to historian Sean O'Hagan, the Troubles began in 1968 at the various marches and demonstrations in Northern Ireland in the autumn of that year. On Monday, 9th of December, the Northern Ireland Prime Minister Terence O'Neill made a television appeal to moderates of every political persuasion in what became known as his Ulster Stands at the Crossroads speech. Who was to know what would unfold over the next 50 years? So what else? 1968 was a standout year for technology. NASA launched Apollo 7 and Apollo 8, culminating in the famous live broadcast by the astronauts on Christmas Eve that year. The Hong Kong pandemic was rampant, and that was the year that the Black Salute was first seen on TV during the Olympics held in Mexico City. The first ATM was installed in Philadelphia. The Intel Corporation was created. Airbags were installed in cars. And Dr. Christian Barnard performs the first successful heart transplant. In popular culture, the first Big Mac was sold in McDonald's and the Beatles released the White Album. Now, many of the songs were recorded in India while the bands were attending a meditation camp there. And while it had mixed reviews at the time, the White Album had been marked by music critics as one of the best albums ever created. Hey Jude was the best-selling single around the world that year. That was released in August of 1968. And the mad thing is that even though the White Album was released the same year, Hey Jude wasn't included on the album. So now it's time for me to introduce you to my first guest, Tony Murray. Tony is a fine art and documentary photographer based in Dublin. He's also a lecturer in media production at the Technological University of Dublin and has just published his first book, Holy Pictures. Now, that was due to launch just before Easter, but because of the pandemic, we'll have a release date later this year. Tony, you're very welcome to Reminiscence on the Radio on Near FM.
How are you, Karen? How are you?
I'm great, Tony. Thank you. Isn't it mad that the more things change, the more things stay the same? 1968 had a pandemic. It had an Olympics. It had the Black Salute. The news roundup. I don't know if you heard any of that news roundup, but did any of that seem so familiar to you?
It does, yeah. Also, what kind of strikes you, a lot of people think that the trouble in the US is new. And then when you just run that little history, you realise, no, this is just repeating. And even now we've discovered that in Tulsa, which I hadn't realised, where Trump is to do his first campaign, I hadn't realised that there was a huge race riot there where so many people of colour were killed as well. You know, so we realise nothing much has changed.
Nothing much has changed, except I think this time, and I think it's mad, but because of the pandemic now, and we're all listening because, you know, we've been talking and listening about COVID for such a long time, that now this is coming at us through social media and on the television, and we're all kind of very acutely aware of what's happening around the world, I suppose, through COVID, that now we're watching and listening, and George Floyd's murder was so brutal, and it just... I've been going through archives and it just seems the same things are being repeated. I've just watched the programme on Netflix last night, 13th. Have you seen that one?
I haven't, but funny enough that you mentioned media, I happen to have open the RT guide of the 24th of August, 1968.
No way! You have it?
I have it open here in front of me.
Oh, Tony, what are you like?
So, now... what's really interesting about when you look back and to see what we were watching and listening to on television is there's a number of things. One is how younger people don't feature at all.
Okay. Not even Wanderley Wagon. What did that not even...
No, God, no. Wanderley Wagon was much, much... I worked on Wanderley Wagon.
Did you?
like when I was a cameraman in RTE.
Wow.
What you have to remember is that television didn't begin until 6 o'clock in the afternoon with the Angelus.
Right. Okay.
So
the children were just discounted.
Television. There was no morning television.
Yeah.
And radio started at 7:55 with the weather forecast. Nothing changes there. It says in the papers nothing changed.
What about O'Donnell Laboo? Was that not the beginning? Dum 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 dum.
That's right, yeah, that's right. That was the beginning.
Yeah.
And so, of course, there was lots of sponsored programs. So at 8:30, you had a program sponsored by Volkswagen.
No way. The only one I can remember is Odlums.
Odlums was on in the
afternoon.
Odlums. So actually what's really, we had the news at 1:30.
Uh-huh.
It was only a 15-minute news. You see, so in a way,
wow.
So news was so slow in getting that to sustain a half an hour or an hour of a news program with the technology that they didn't have would have been really difficult.
Mm.
So effectively, all you're getting were news headlines. So the main news was at 1 o'clock, we had the Kennedys of Castle Ross. Everybody remembers
that.
Remember that,
yeah, yeah.
Because that kind of mark, you normally came in from school. Because
I totally did on my bike and starving. Yeah, yeah.
And that would be playing because you often got out at school at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then, so that was, I still actually tell my wife when I'm leaving the house, Birdie Must Fly.
I haven't heard that for years.
And do you know who Birdie was? Do you remember who Birdie was?
Wasn't he a character in there?
She was Birdie O'Hanlon.
Yeah.
And she was sign off, Birdie Must Fly.
Yeah.
And she was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I still say Birdie Must Fly.
Oh, and, that's nice.
So you had the Kendies at Castle Ross, and then you had the Prescott Cleaners.
Oh, you're going back. I remember the Prescott Cleaners. Weren't they in Middle Abbey Street, just off Carl Street?
Yeah, they were a chain. I think they were obviously a concession, I'd say.
Do you know how
and
I know
you
them?
Had Birds, but of course the most famous of all, besides the Candies of Castle Ross,
yeah,
is the Jacobs programme. Was at 2 o'clock.
That was Dear Frankie, wasn't it?
Dear Frankie.
Yeah, it may
and
not happen to you today.
Only played Frank Sinatra songs.
Ah.
And that was, we listened to that because, and now when you listen, there are some recordings of them online. You can hear them, and the advice she gives, you kind of go, whoa.
Yeah.
And and then the RTE then went off air at 3 o'clock and didn't come back until 5 o'clock.
And why was that? Just not enough programming, or was it just a holy thing, or what was that?
There was a kind of also paternalistic kind of thing. What would you be doing listening to radio?
Yeah, go off and do your housework and put on your dinner for your husband because he's coming in the door.
I remember when I started working, I had a summer job in a jeweller's. And the radio would just go off at 3 o'clock and then there was nothing. And then 5 o'clock the radio came back on and you knew it was time to start heading home.
Wow.
So in a way, then you know, we had...
It kind of punctuated. It was like Pavlov's dog telling us what to do next, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we hadn't got the same access to news. But also looking at the programmes, as I said, there really wasn't anything for young children or for teenagers.
And your website, Tony, I was having a look at it during the week and you have in it, I'm particularly interested in the ambiguity of images and the joy of looking. I was intrigued by that. Tell us, is that, you know, is that because you became a photographer, or you became a photographer because of that?
No, I think I became a photographer, painter. I studied painting in the NCAD.
Okay.
I think I loved sport but was terrible at it.
Okay.
And I had the fortune or misfortune to come from Kilkenny. Now, I lived in Dublin all my life.
Yeah.
So everybody presumed, being from Kilkenny, I was a fantastic hurler. Not true. I was dreadful. But I love hurling, but I didn't play. So I think I had to find something else to define myself in.
Okay.
So I started going to art galleries at a very young age.
Okay.
And in 1968, I can still remember it, my mother, on Stevens's Day, I do believe, sent me across to the National Gallery because there was a free painting class by an artist called John Skelton.
Okay.
And so children trooped over and you spent a whole day painting. And I think at that moment I realised it was actually okay to paint. It was kind of real. And
how old were you then, Tony?
Exciting. And so I was 13 at the time.
Okay,
and
so you were the right age to make a decision like that.
Yeah, and I was always interested in art. I always paint and was always drawing, like lots of kids do.
Mm.
But because I think I didn't have the option of sport, I ended up drawing and painting every day for years. That's just what I did. And music also became a way to define myself. A lot of boys would define themselves in sport or hanging out, but I wasn't nerdy, but I was very lucky. I found three other friends in school who were all interested in the same thing, and the four of us all ended up in the NCAD together in the early 70s. But I think I just found myself through going to the gallery. Living in Phibsborough, the municipal gallery was very near.
Mm.
So at a very young age, well, at that age, I was going to the gallery on my own and just looking at pictures.
And tell us, was art a subject in the Leaving Cert back then? Or how did you get into
it? But it was...
And did you get into NCAD on a portfolio, or was it an art exam, or how did you get there?
No. It was a test, but which is not any real way to do art in a way. And I started working, and then I went to College of Art at night time and then decided to go full time, much to my mother's horror. I've given up a good job and gone to that damn art school where all the trouble began, which actually began in 1968. I didn't get there till 1972-ish, but the troubles in Paris, that whole student movement, all started fermenting in Ireland, the troubles in Northern Ireland. So by the time I got to the NCAD, it was a hotbed of protest and trouble.
And
fantastic place to be.
Well, absolutely. Well, for all students, it's like a magnet, isn't it? A bit of trouble is a magnet.
And
part of this programme, Tony, is Reminiscence on the Radio. So it's about memories through songs and stories and news items and a splash of poetry. And we were chatting earlier in the week and you told me that your favourite poem, or rather the favourite part of a poem, was The Ballad of Reading Gaol by Oscar Wilde. So what I'm going to do, you've asked me to just read the little, there's three verses, the middle section of that poem, and then maybe you tell us why you like that bit so much. So yes. as a reminder for listeners who may or may not be familiar with this poem, The Ballad of Reading Gaol, it's written by Oscar Wilde. So this is the middle section of the poem. The man had killed the thing he loved, and so he had to die. Yet each man kills the thing he loves. By each, let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword. Some kill their love when they are young, and some when they are old. Some strangle with the hands of lust, some with the hands of gold. The kindest use a knife, because the dead so soon grow cold. Some love too little and some too long, some sell and others buy. Some do the deed with many tears, and some without a sigh. For each man kills the thing he loves, yet each man does not die. So tell us, Tony, why did you pick that poem and why did you pick that section?
Well, initially, the poem, the line that grabbed me as a child, as a youngster doing my junior cert, was they looked up to the tent, which was their sky of blue. It's that notion that they're in a yard, they looked up and the sky was effectively their only canvas. And that's all they could see ever changing. And that struck me as a really, really strong image. And every time I sit in the garden where you're surrounded by a high wall, I look up and I think of that poem. The idea of the clouds effectively being a painting and being moving, whether it's birds, clouds, or contrails from a jet. But as I got older and became a father, I started thinking that the thing that can kill your children is a selfish love.
Okay.
And I think as a parent, like as a young child, that was too complex for me because you're too young, you're caught up in yourself. But as a parent, those lines where some kill their love when they are young and some when they are old. And it's just the idea that you can kill your children with love and not give them independence, not give them like autonomy. And love can smother, it can kill in so many ways. And somehow the greatest love a parent can do for their child is to set them free.
That's it. Give them roots and wings. I know that sounds very trite, but I know my mum used to say, there's your map and there's your compass, off you go.
Yeah. And you realise as a parent, because I made my own mistakes, you have to make your own mistakes. You just, that's how you learn. Sometimes there are tragic consequences. Of course there are, but that's called life. You just cannot overprotect. So it struck me as being a parent of three children, two boys and a girl, that you just have to be so careful. So that poem, in a sense, kind of initially, as a youngster, caught me the notion of looking up out of a yard, a prison yard, and seeing the sky. And then as an adult, it was those lines that really just spoke to me.
Wow. Well, I must say, I had studied that that poem in school and I hadn't read it for a very long time. But those lines are very powerful, aren't they?
They're almost a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost a prayer. It's the, I mean, they have not a religious and not overly religious, but they have that strong spiritual. And of course, what was missing when you were learning it in school and I was learning it like in school was the context of the poem.
Yes, of course.
Which is kind of important when you go old, you realise why he was in jail and all of that. So I think, so as you know the context of the poem, we realise this is just extraordinary, and what a life he must have been leading in that jail when he was so. I mean, he would have been today's version of the celebrity, the media, the quick-witted.
Mm.
He would have been on so many television programs.
The darling.
And here he was now in a jail for something now that we think is
absolutely normal
every day.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Unremarkable. Nobody told us that in school, of course.
Yeah. So 1968, Tony, is your year. Tell us, why is that year a special one for you? What happened?
I think I was very lucky in a way to be 13 at that year, because as I said earlier,
that was the year you discovered painting.
Art and music to define myself.
Yeah.
And it was just that kind of, I suppose it was a kind of an explosion of music and popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I tapped into that now. I was much younger. But certain songs, I would say, changed my life in terms of music, in terms of how I saw myself. And so I think it helped me define myself. And what you kind of forget now is that if you're into music, then you had album covers. Now, album covers are wonderful things because they're big.
Yes, yes.
So even the covers of LPs,
like
as we call them, we didn't call them albums.
Oh, LPs, no, we always call them LPs,
Were absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
And just so that even going to a record shop for somebody of my age who couldn't afford to buy albums was
the
literally like going to a contemporary art gallery.
Yeah, window shopping.
And
the White Album.
But like, you looked at them. I got to know who the artists were, the photographers were. You had sleeve notes, which were so that you could read all of that. So effectively, I was kind of, I was really submerging myself in that kind of, I suppose, popular culture, whereas I wouldn't know who played on what football team or who scored. I'd have an idea, but I wouldn't be really good at it. But I knew who was what in music and the family tree of various groups, because, again, a lot of it was contained on album covers. So going to the record shops, and there were so many of them in town, and they all, or not all, but a lot of them were specialists. Some would do more blues, rock. There was one in Liffey Street, and he specialised in Count John McCormack albums.
Oh, my dad's
Green.
Favourite. Yeah, yeah.
And so there was that kind of special. You basically, on Saturday, I would do the rounds of record shops.
Okay.
And you were just... but often it was just the covers I was fascinated by.
Yeah.
And I remember buying an album, Fire, it's called, by The Crazy World of Arthur Brown, and leaving it at the end of my bed so when I'd wake up, I'd see the cover.
Oh.
I was so inspired by the cover.
Wow.
So was that kind of just awakening?
Yes.
And also, I think, finding, I suppose, similar people who weren't into sport, and it was okay to
you
be
found
not
your tribe.
Into sport in a way.
Mm. So I've two songs coming up, also hits in the Irish charts in 1968. And I'm not sure if you would know these two. Would they be very, very familiar to you? Little Arrows by Brendan O'Brien and the Dixies. And Honey by Bobby Goldsborough. Did those two, do they mean anything to you?
No, you see, I define myself, well, I still define myself as a musical snob. So in a sense, those songs were almost the mark of the devil to me,
you know,
because I was cool.
Well, I'm going to have such pleasure playing these.
I was rebelling.
Yeah.
So I really discovered Cream, Sunshine of Your Love, all
cool
the candy. So I was looking for a kind of authentic music, as I called it. So I was searching down and down. So those songs, in a sense, were the very thing that drove me to this other music, in a way.
I'm gonna have such joy playing these two now, because what I was looking at were the hits, the biggest hits in Ireland, and in many cases, the biggest hits in Ireland were also the same hits in the UK and also in the US. But we had our own special ones. Like I played Mary from Dunloe, which would obviously be a very local song, and still loved, and I still hear that on the radio sometimes. Little Arrows, I haven't heard in years, and then when I played it, I thought, I know every word of that. My mother must have sung it around the kitchen because I knew every single word of that. And then Honey.
It was by the Dixies, wasn't it?
Yes, Brendan O'Brien and the Dixies, you're absolutely right. And then
Brendan from Cork, they were from Cork.
Yes, yeah, you're absolutely
and
right.
And they had a fantastic drummer, he wore glasses. He was a real showman on the drums. I think McCarty was his name.
I don't know that. And then tell us about Honey.
And it is a cover version. It is a cover of an American song. Like a lot of Irish songs then were covers, obviously.
Yeah.
And Bobby Goldsborough was... I mean, that was a huge hit at the time.
Massive. Now, it has two things that made it famous. One was that it was a number one around the world in 1968. It was also re-released in 1975 and again in 1978. But it was also, its biggest accolade now is it's voted second worst song of the 60s by Rolling Stone magazine. So you're in good company there, Tony.
I would, you see, now there I am, you see. There are some really, which I'll mention, after the two, there are some really significant songs that were written in 1968, and one in particular. And it was such an amazing year. But anyway, listen, we have to be Catholic in our approach to music and accept it all.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm going to give a blast of Little Arrows. I really like this one. This is from the Irish Show Band collection. It's Little Arrows, Brendan O'Brien and the Dixies.
There's a boy, a little boy, shooting arrows in the blue, and he's aiming them at someone, but the question is at who? Is it me, or is it you? It's hard to tell until you're hit, but you'll know it when they hit you, 'cause they hurt a little bit. Here they come, pouring out of the blue, little arrows for me and for you. You're falling in love again, you're falling in love again. Little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows everywhere. Little arrows that will hit you once and hit you once again. Little arrows that hit everybody every now and then. Some folks run and others hide, but there ain't nothing they can do. Some folks put on armor, but the arrows go straight through. So you see, there's no escape. So why not face it and admit that you love those little arrows when they hurt a little bit? Here they come, pouring out of the blue. Little arrows for me and for you. You're falling in love again. You're falling in love again. Little arrows in your clothing, little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows everywhere. Little arrows that will hit you once and hit you once again. Little arrows that hit everybody every now and then. Here they come, pouring out of the blue. Little arrows for me and for you.
It was Little Arrows by Brendan O'Brien and the Dixies. So Tony, did you enjoy that? A little, go on.
It's lovely to dance around the kitchen too when you're trying to maybe dry up or something and you just want to bop around. What do you remember the label it was on?
Not a clue.
It was on the Pie label, which had a pink, a very bright kind of pink with black writing and a black band across the masthead, which is now, when you look at it, is really iconic. That brings you back to... So a lot of the Irish records were on the Pie label.
Wow. No, didn't know that.
And that brings you right back. I remember seeing, because everybody had...
No, in fairness,
like
I was
that.
Three, so that's...
And it just brings but even the labels on singles were kind of iconic. And now with CDs and with download, we don't even know a label. Labels don't mean anything.
No, they don't.
But labels meant a lot then.
Yeah.
I started a little business in school.
Okay.
I used to cut out. I would cut out on drawing paper the size of the label, the actual template, and I used to do designs on it, a kind of psychedelic designs, and stick them on the record.
Oh, and I used make to sell your own labels. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So to be very modern, very florid kind of writing, very bright colour, very psychedelic, very much in.
And can you remember how much
some
you
of
charged?
The boys thought they were really cool.
Yeah, how much did you charge, Tony?
To do them.
How much did you charge for those? Can you remember?
Oh, it was probably a shilling. Well, no, it wouldn't have been a shilling because singles were 1 and 6 or 2 and 6, I think, at the time. So it probably would have been, I'd say, truppence or something, sixpence or something. Small, but it was just.
But you would have got your bespoke one
For about a year, and we used to dream and we used to talk about that at some stage singles would be coloured.
Wow!
And of course, it wasn't long after until they were actually coloured.
Yeah.
And to put pictures on them, but that was my dream, that singles would become actual kind of beautiful objects rather than just black.
So you were totally ahead of yourself, Tony.
I did, but I didn't exploit it. I didn't make enough money. I should have seen the opportunity.
Or else you should have had one of your mates.
Serrated scissors.
Yeah.
Because when you cut them out with a straight scissors, you'd see it wasn't a full circle. You'd see it was uneven. But in a serrated scissors, you could get away with murder.
Oh, yeah, like pinking shears, we used to call that in dressmaking.
Yes, the pinking shears, that's right, pinking shears. Yeah, my mother from dressmaking.
Yes, got way back.
Most mams did dressmaking and was usually the pinking shears in the house somewhere. So that gave it an extra kind of texture.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you so much for those memories, Tony. We're going to have another guest on, Christine O'Kelly, who works from DCU. You might know her as a contemporary, but I'm going to just give you a little blast of Honey. I won't torture with the full song, but I will give you a little blast of Honey. Because I like it. So, Tony, thanks so much for joining me today. Here's a little blast of Bobby Goldsborough.
You're most welcome.
Thanks.
See the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long, it wasn't big. I laughed at her and she got mad, the first day that she planted it was just a twig. Then the first snow came and she ran out to brush the snow away so it wouldn't die. Came running in, all excited, slipped and almost hurt herself, and I laughed till I cried. She was always young at heart, kinda dumb and kinda smart, and I loved her so. And I surprised her with a puppy, kept me up all Christmas Eve, 2 years ago. And it would sure embarrass her when I came in from working late, 'cause I would know that she'd been sitting there and crying over some sad and silly late, late show. And honey, I miss you, and I'm being good, and I'd love to be with you if only I could. She wrecked the car and she was sad and so afraid that I'd be mad, but what the heck. Though I pretended hard to be, guess you could say she saw through me and hugged my neck. I came home unexpectedly and caught her crying needlessly in the middle of the day. And it was in the early spring when flowers bloom and robins sing, she went away. And honey, I miss you, and I'm being good, and I'd love to be with you if only I could. One day while I was not at home, while she was there and all alone, the angels came. Now all I have is memories of honey, and I wake up nights and call her name.
Honey by Bobby Goldsborough, and we've just been listening to Tony Murray. So Tony has just written a book with all his gorgeous photographs called Holy Pictures, and if you want to get a copy of that, you can buy it on High Tones, hightonebooks.ie. I'll spell that HITONEBOOKS, hightonebooks.ie, or follow Tony Murray on Facebook. So now we have our next guest. Our second guest is Christine O'Kelly. Christine is the Age Friendly University Network Global Coordinator in Dublin City University, or DCU. Hi, Christine. Thanks for taking part.
Karen.
Yes, thanks for taking part in Reminiscence of the Radio. How are you doing over the last couple of months, and how are you managing to do a global network coordinator in these?
Well, thank God for technology. It's one of the huge advantages we have in the university sector, that we've got a lot of technology and we can harness the technology.
Yes, and we've people on Zoom that never thought they could Zoom before.
That's it. And in actual fact, we're doing regular Zoom sessions, training sessions for people if they want to just log on. They don't have to be a member of the university or engage with DCU. But you can log on and book a spot, and you can have a Zoom tutorial online.
Oh,
a live Zoom
fantastic.
Tutorial to help people navigate Zoom, because I think for the next couple of months it will allow people to be more included in what's going on.
So how do they get onto that? So if I wanted to get on that tutorial, how would I do it, Christine?
Well, just if you either go onto our DCU website, it's mm-hmm. agefriendly.dcu/agefriendly, mm-hmm. and you'll see in the news section it says Get Connected. And if you click on the link there, you'll see that there's a registration letter. So you need to just register. Now, you do have to have an email address. I will say that at the outset. So you register. You just click on the link, put in your email, and say what day you'd like to take part. And then the day before, Kian, who's doing our training for us, will send an email invitation. And all of the instructions are in the email invitation. And it allows people to just ask practical questions.
Brilliant.
You know, it's all very well having a tutorial that's not live, but this is a live tutorial, so you can ask your question.
Fantastic.
And say, listen, how do I do this? How do I do that?
Yes, or my sound isn't working,
yeah.
or I can't see anything, and it's just
exactly.
a question of
and
turning
how do I
your
get
camera
the sound
on.
Up?
Yeah, brilliant. Well done, Christine. I mean, that's a practical solution. And, you know, because it's going to be like this for a while, isn't it?
I think so. I think that we're looking at a different type of working.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned because obviously my focus is on aging and on how we age. I'm a little bit concerned about, well, more than a little bit concerned about the benevolent ageism that's been going on in the media and the requirement for people over 70 who are pretty well and healthy and engaged, being told they can't go out and this sort of thing. It sort of has set back the ageing dialogue in Ireland
it has,
a number
hasn't
of years,
it? Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so 69 and you're fine, and 70 you're cocooned. It's kind of I know they had to draw a line in the sand somewhere, but you know I'm really glad that I'm not 70 and a half, because
one person's 70 is another person's 40.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I think nowadays we're all living much longer. We've much better interventions. I think people are able to take the decision for themselves. And I think in the main, older Irish people, and we mean older is over 55.
I know.
WHO standards,
I know, yeah.
They're able to make those decisions for themselves.
Yeah.
And I even feel that the way people are being portrayed in media, when you see images of older people, it's the same older person sitting in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But the needs of a person at 60 and the needs of a person at 70 and 80 and 90 and beyond are all very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we see in RTE now are doing I saw an advertisement, well, you know, promotion of a woman who was 100 years old and the She's engaging with her great-grandson through the window of her house. And she's written him a letter. And, you know, it's a little snippet on RTE in between the adverts. And I think, like, the people laud this. I think this is fantastic. But this is actually going to be the future. We're all going to live to be much older and longer and more engaged. And
and the whole thing about technology you were mentioning there, Christine, I'm a member of the Forget-Me-Nots Choir, and we meet twice a week on Zoom. And we are on a WhatsApp group as well. So there's 135 members on WhatsApp, very busy WhatsApp group, I have to tell you. And on Zoom regularly, we have, there are usually about 60, between 68 and sometimes we've 81 devices tuning in. And oftentimes you'd have two people per device. So you'd have two people sitting on a couch, either a husband and wife, or you would have a mother and daughter or a father and son. So we've counted the bodies and there are regularly 100 people there on Zoom. And yes, it was a bit of a struggle at the beginning, but it was a bit of a struggle for me and for everybody else. as well. It wasn't just because you're older. It was new technology. But once you get the hang of it and you understand what you can and can't do on Zoom, we're all messaging each other now while there's a Zoom conversation on, and we're doing warm-ups, and Nora Walsh, our musical director, is doing warm-ups, and we're doing stretching, and we did chair yoga on Tuesday. So, I mean, Zoom is a wonderful way to stay connected, and WhatsApp. And who would have thought, you know, even 6 months ago, that if you'd said to a lot of people in our choir, and many of them have dementia, you know, that you'll be able to log on by yourself without anyone helping you, and you'll be able to send videos and messages through WhatsApp. They would have thought, no, you're mad, I wouldn't be able for that.
But you know, Carol, the old adage, needs must.
Needs must, so exactly.
We're not required to use these things. We think, oh, I'm not sure if I could manage that, and you're put off by it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that it's the passport to communication with people.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's when you need to use it, it's on a needs basis. So
yeah.
If you need to use it, you need to learn how to use it. So that's one of the things we thought in
and it's been it has been a godsend. It is, because it has connected us all, and it's been very tough times for a lot of members. We've lost a lot of members through the last number of months, and we've been able to connect. We've been able to watch each other's funerals on webcams. Who would have thought that this is the way we'd be working in 2020? But thank God for technology. I'm such a supporter. Christine, we spoke before about favourite things we did when we were kids, and I know you spoke about the cinema. So
that's right.
Yeah, so tell us about a memory of yours, 1968 or thereabouts, and what a favourite memory of yours about the cinema or a movie.
So I grew up born and bred in Donnycarney, mm-hmm. from the Gillespie Cinema, and I'm the youngest child of a very large family of older children that were born in the 40s and 50s, and then I came along in the middle of the 60s, much a surprise to my parents, myself and a twin brother. So the cinema was very much embedded in the house, and my parents went to the cinema every Friday night. And they would go down and get the tickets on a Wednesday for the Friday night showing. And it brought people together in the community.
Yeah.
Of course, it was Gillespie Cinema, which locally is known as The Killer.
Oh.
And I saw Oliver there. One of my brothers brought me to see Oliver there must have been December of that year. It was around Christmas time, I remember. And we saw Finian's Rainbow there. And not all the local movies that were on. Everybody went, and we had a great time at the cinema. And of course, you know, the cinema culture is a huge thing in Ireland, and continues to be, you know, hugely well attended in an Irish context. But all of the local cinemas that we had around the area at the time, we went to The Killer, but of course it was the other cinema up there in Whitehall. Inchicore had their own cinema. The Stella in Rathmines, they had their own cinema. So it was very much locally based in the community. And
nice way to meet neighbours as well, wasn't it?
Pardon?
It was a nice way to meet neighbours.
Yeah, neighbours, exactly, to meet the neighbours.
Yeah.
And my mother was hugely interested in all the different, you know, cinema stars. So you'd be watching, you know, a Western, and my mother would be saying, oh, no, he got married to her, and she went around with him, and she'd have all this. But she knew all of the
gossip.
You know, Jack Palance, she always called him Lemon Jaws, Jack Palance, and Victor Mature, all of these people that she would have, you know.
Yeah.
So I sort of grew up, loving the cinema, and I still love the cinema, and I love older movies as well, because I love the stories and, you know, all of the Ealing comedies, all of those sort of things.
Yeah.
So... but I found certainly, you know, even from my own time, I saw Snow White and Seven Dwarfs in Gillespie Cinema, and my twin brother was so afraid of the witch with the apples that he got under the seat.
Oh, that's a lovely memory.
The cinema closed.
Yeah.
But in fact, you know, of course we have the Odeon now quite close to us now, so, you know, there's no need. But I also think it was also an event.
It
was an event in people's lives to go.
Yeah.
It was something to look forward to.
It's pure escapism.
Yeah.
And our first guest, Tony Murray, had a copy of the RT Guide dated 1968 out in front of him. I don't know where he got it, but fair play to him. And there were no children's programmes on the television then. So going to the movies would have been an amazing thing to do, because it would have been you'd have been totally engaged with the film. So I have a question for you, Christine.
Yeah.
What was the winning film, Best Oscar? Best film with the Oscars that year, 1968.
Oh, God, I don't know. Let me see now. I think it might have been... would it have been The Odd Couple?
No. But I think you mentioned it when you were talking about films
You'd
seen. Yes,
Oliver.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is one of my favourite tracks from Oliver. So,
right.
Yeah, so I'm going to line it up here and we'll have a little chat about Oliver, because this... and it's hit after hit, but this was my very favourite one.
In this life, one thing counts in the bank, large amounts. I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You gotta
a pick a pocket or two. You got a pick a pocket or two, boys.
You got a pick a pocket or two.
Why should we break our backs stupidly paying tax? Better get some untaxed income. Better pick a pocket or two. You've got a pick a pocket or two, boys.
You've got a pick a pocket or two.
Why should we all break our backs? Better pick a pocket or two.
Who says crime doesn't pay?
Robin Hood, what a crook, gave away what he took. Charity's fine, subscribe to mine. Get out and pick a pocket or two. You gotta pick a pocket or two, boys.
You gotta pick a pocket or two.
Robin Hood wants for two goods. Can pick a pocket or two.
My merry men.
Take a tip from Bill Sykes. He can whip what he likes. I recall he started small. He had to pick a pocket or two. You gotta pick a pocket or two.
You gotta pick a pocket or two.
If at first you don't succeed.
When I see someone rich, both my thumbs start to itch. Only to find some peace of mind, I have to pick a pocket or two. You gotta pick a pocket or two.
Just to find some peace of mind,
you have to pick a pocket or two.
That was Ron Moody from the original song, You've Got to Pick a Pocket or Two, in the Oliver soundtrack. He got a Golden Globe for that. He was nominated for Best Actor, was pipped to the post by Cliff Robertson, who played the title role in Charlie. And he played the same role as Fagin and when Oliver was revived on Broadway in 1984, and got a Tony Award for that. So, Christine, did that bring you back? Did you like it?
It did indeed. And it's a lovely movie, that, Oliver.
I know. So it comes out every Christmas.
I was always concerned about the Boy for Sale song, because when I was younger, I'd be saying to my mother, you could never sell a child, could you?
I know, like, that film, when you watch it as an adult, it's very dark. You know, there's abuse, there's thievery, there's all sorts of things, and those poor children were so deprived, but the songs were great. And when I was young, I remember the songs. And I always wanted to be in a musical, and I thought that all the great musicals were out then. The Sound of Music and Oliver and The Wizard of Oz and all of those wonderful ones, they were all my favourites. So, on speaking of songs then, the Eurovision, was that a big event in your house?
No, not really. As I said, there was a lot of different competing age groups in my house. So there were people in their 20s, and there were people in their late teens, and then there was us two children.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of, you know, songs like, you know, you'd have Marmalade, you know, the Obla Di Obla Da.
Oh, yeah.
You could have Brendan O'Brien and the Dixies. Arrows in another room.
Yes, yes.
And my mother with a sweeping brush banging on the ceiling saying, turn that noise down, you know. So, I don't recall Eurovision being hugely popular. Though I do remember those were the days, you know, Mary Hopkins.
Yes, we opened the show today with Mary Hopkins. Yes, we did. That was one of my favourites. When I was picking, when I was picking the songs for today, I was looking at what were the best top 50 hits, and so I picked my favourites, and those were the days when I opened with, and I love that song. And actually, the Eurovision why I brought it up was because it's famous. 1968 is famous for having the most the song that, there was a lot of controversy that year, but the song that got second was the most famous song in the Eurovision that never won. Have you any idea what it might be? It got second.
Oh, goodness.
It was the UK.
I have no idea now, Karen, to be honest.
And you've heard it at every wedding, every 21st.
No shoes on.
No, you've heard it at every wedding and every party. Congratulations. Yes, and this has gone on.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was
Cliff Richard
got second, and the winning song that year was was a song called La La La, and it was originally entered, it was a Spain entry, and it was originally entered with Joan Manuel Serrat from Barcelona, and he was the singer, but he demanded to sing it in Catalan, but because he wasn't happy about the General Franco state dictatorship at the time, so he wanted to sing it in Catalan. They'd already chosen the song and submitted it to the Eurovision, and so they got rid of him and they put in another singer who went by the name of Maciel, and she sang the same song in Spanish, and she won, and it was the first time Spain had ever won the Eurovision. But the whole thing about the controversy was that there was vote fixing and all sorts of things. There was loads of comment about it, and they said that Cliff Richard that year was robbed and he should have won. But I mean, he was at the last laugh because he's been now played at every wedding anywhere around the world.
Absolutely.
So that's the song that's going to play us out. It's La 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 by Maciel. So 1968, just tell us, Christine, why that year was a very special one for you before we go.
Well, I suppose I was at the stage where I became more aware of what was going on around me and about the structure of my family. And I lived in a community that was quite close-knit, but things were starting to change. You know, they were starting to talk about, you know, we were starting to look more outward, I think. I just remember my brothers and sisters talking about, like, more jobs where they didn't have jobs before. You know, the possibilities seemed to be greater and opportunities seemed to be greater. There was a debate at one stage about one of my older brothers going to live in Australia and emigrate to Australia. My mother was terribly worried about this, and it didn't happen in the end, but I suppose I was growing up in a time that was of huge change in the 1960s.
You're right, and 1968 was the
impact, yeah. I look back on it now.
Well, 1968, yeah. When I was doing a bit of research on it, it was a defining year, not just for that decade, but I think it still has echoes today. So, Christine, thank you. I can't believe that hour has gone so quickly already. Thank you so much for joining me. And it's really good news to hear about the Zoom and how people can connect to DCU Age Friendly. And so they just they go on to Google DCU /Age Friendly. They'll be able to find you.
If you go to the website, if you just Google DCU Age Friendly website, it'll bring you to my site. And you see on the news section, it'll be Stay Connected. And you can click in there and you can find out how to link in with us.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for that, Christine. And thanks also to my guest, Tony Murray, for joining us this evening to share the memories of 1968. I'd like to say a big thank you to Joe Behan for his help on the sound desk today. I'm Karen Meenan. And if you want to share your 1960 story, or if you have a favourite poem you'd like to recite, just please text us and tell us why you like it so much. And if you want to listen back to today's show, you can find the podcast on Near FM, or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and the text is 087-6944-500. Stay tuned to Near FM to JB on Ska Patrol from 8 to 10. And to sing us out, we have that song, La La La, the Spanish entry, 1968. Thanks for listening.
Yo canto a la mañana que ve mi juventud, sol que día a día nos trae.